Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. We had a brisa on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin that quoted the Chachamim of Rabbi Meir and then the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim of Rabbi Meir are called the Chacham Rishonim, and the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda at the end of the brisa are called Chacham Achronim. We're up to the sugya that tries to clarify the Chachamim in the brisa, and specifically the Chacham Achronim that are quoted after Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara asks the following question: Chachamim, these last Chachamim that are mentioned after Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, that said that in a Bama Ketana, a Yochid is not Makriv a Karban Chova, but only a Karban Adov of Olav Ishlamim. Hainu Tanakama. The Gemara says, isn't that identical with the Tanakhama, the Chacham Rishonim, that are brought at the beginning of the Braisa? They also hold that a Yochid doesn't bring Karban Chova on a Bama. The Tzibur can bring a Karban Chova on a Bama, but not the Yochid. So what's the difference between the Chacham at the beginning of the Braisa and the Chacham at the end of the Braisa? The Chacham Rishonim and the Chachamim Achronim. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa comes to answer the machlokas. He says, "Karvu nisachim b'midbar ikabeinai." The machlokas is whether or not they were makriv nisachim in the midbar. Now, a karban ola, a karban shlamim, is accompanied by nisachim, and that's certainly true in the case of a karban yachid when Klal Yisrael were in the midbar. And the Nesachim were brought on a regular basis as a Tosefes, as an accompaniment, an addition, an embellishment to the Ola and the Shlomim. That's true for both a Karban Yochid and a Karban Tzibur as well. In the case of Karbanos Tzibur, even in the Midbar, they certainly brought Nesachim. And that's explicit in the parish of Karbanos Miluim at the end of Sefer Shmos. It says, "Vizeh Asher taseh al mizbeach, v'nasach revius hahin yain lekeves echad." The machlokas here is specifically with regard to korbanos yachid. Korbanos tzibur was certainly brought with nesachim during this period of time when Klal Yisrael were in the midbar, and that happens at the korbanos hamiluim explicitly. Those were the nesachim. Now, as far as the Nesachim that are accompanying an Ola and Shlomim in a Karban Yochid is concerned, while Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar, here we have a machlokas between the Chachamim Rishonim and the Chachamim Achronim. Rashi explains that according to the Chachamim Rishonim, when Klal Yisrael, that period of time, were in the Midbar, they did not accompany their Karbanos Yochid with Nesachim. There was no Hakrav of Nesachim in the Midbar, because the parsha in which they got a command to be makriv nesachim in Bamidbar Tesvav is ki tavo al eretz moshvos sechem. And from the word moshvos sechem, we derive that there was a chova, there was an obligation to be makriv nesachim together with the ola and the shlomim. And that would be chal moshvos sechem immediately when they entered after they entered into Eretz Yisrael, and following the period of Yerusha Yeshiva, those 14 years, and then they came to Shiloh. The Chacham Achronim here at the end of the Braisa, that's the Chacham quoted after Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, they come to add onto the Divrei Rishonim, because their opinion is that even in the Midbar, the Yochid, when he brought a Karban Ola Oshlamim, he would accompany that Karban with Nesachim. And therefore, immediately when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, they had that obligation. The Pasuk Kisavol Eretz Moshe Osechem is coming to be Marbe a Chovas Nesachim even in a Bamas Yochid. And Rashi tries to answer the question here, how did the Gemara know that this was the Nafkamita between the Chacham Rishon and the Chacham Achronim? L'chora, when you read the Divrei Chachamim Achronim carefully, and their words were Kol Shat Sibur Makrivim Biol Moed Sheba Midbar Makrivim Begilgol, which means that all the karbonos of the tzibur that were brought in the Oel Moed in the Midbar were brought in Gilgal in the Bomas Tzibur. Now, why did the Chacham have to mention this? They basically, those are the words of Rabbi Yehuda. They should have just said, Kan v'kan lo karvu liyochid ala ol shlom. They should have just disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda about the possibility of a yochid bringing a carbon chov on a bama. It must be, says Rashi, that the Chacham Achronim are coming to add something to the Chachamim Arishonim. And this is what they're saying, that any tzibur that has to be makriv in the Ol Moed in the Midbar, and anything included in that hakrova, including the tzachim, they would be makriv also in the Ol Moed should be Gilgal. And that applies both to tzibur and yochid. In Abamas Yochid, there was a chova to bring the tzachim together with the Olos Ushlamim and Adava. Because according to the Shittas Achronim, there's a chidush here in the parsha of Nesachim, and it says Kisavol Eres Moshe Sechem. That means after you enter into the land, you'll bring Nesachim even on a bama ketana. It's not that Moshe Sechem is coming to be mechayev Nesachim in Karbonas Yachid after Yerusha of the Yeshiva, which would be true according to the first opinion, the Chacham Rishonim, because already in the Midbar they were noheg to be makriv nesachim in a karbonos yachid, and therefore it must mean that Eresh Moshe Sechem is telling me that when you go into the land, even in Gilgal, immediately you'll accompany your karbonos, meaning the olos ushlamim, with nesachim. That's according to the Chacham Achronim. So let's just summarize the machlokas here according to our Papa's explanation between the Chacham Rishonim and the Chacham Achronim. According to the Chacham Rishonim, there were no Nesachim that were brought in the Midbar, because in the Parsha Nesachim, the Torah says, Kisavo el Eretz Moshe Seichem, which would mean that as far as the Karbonos of a Yachid are concerned, it's only when they came into the land and they came to Shiloh after the 14 years of Yerusha V'Yeshiva, that's when they would accompany, the Yachid would accompany his Karbonos of Ola and Shlomim with Nesachim. In contrast, according to the Chacham Achronim, quoted in the Brice after Rabbi Yehuda, in the Midbar they were Makriv with Karbonos Yachid Nesachim. The Nesachim would accompany even the Karbonos Yachid in the Midbar. And therefore Gilgal, which has the same status, they were makriv with the karbonos, the nesachim. So the pasuk Moshe Sechem, which is mentioned in the parsha Nesachim, means that as soon as they cross the Yarden and they establish the Mizbech in Gilgal, already there was akrova on Abamas Yachid, and together with these karbonos, the Dorm Nedavis of Olan Shlamim, they would accompany them with nesachim. Now we're up to the third sheet, and that's Rabbi Shimon. Omar Mar, we saw in the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer Af Tzibur Lo Ekriv El Psochim V'Chovos Shekavu Lehem Zman. That Psochim, that becomes the paradigm for Hakrova on Abamas Tzibur. Why? Because Psochim is called a Karbon Tzibur, and we had a discussion about that yesterday. And not only that, it's a Chova Hakavu Lazman. Has a special time. Any carbon which fits that bill and mirrors that profile, it's A, a carbon tzibur. Number two, it's a carbon chova. Number three, it's kavulem zman, can be brought on a bamas tzibur. That's according to Reb Shimon. All the carbonos, we mentioned a few yesterday, that don't have a zman kavua, even though they are chovos hatzibur, will not be brought on a Bamas Tzibur according to Rav Shimon. My time with Rav Shimon, from whence does Rav Shimon derive this conclusion? The Chsiv in Yoshua, it says, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael sapesach ba-Gilgal. Immediately after crossing the Yarden in Gilgal, they brought the Korban Pesach. It says in the Pasuk, Vayachnu b'nei Yisrael ba-Gilgal vayasu es ha-Pesach. And the question is, Pshita. Of course, they had to be makriv the Korban Pesach. Why did the Torah, why did the Tanakh have to go out of its way to emphasize that they brought the Korban Pesach? Alohaka mashma, the chiddush here is, the chovos ki ein pesachu de korev. What kind of korbanos can be brought in Gilgal, namely on a bomas tzibur, only that which is similar to the paradigm of case of Pesach? A chovo, that's kavua lehem zman. With a carbon that doesn't fit the bill, it doesn't mirror image a carbon Pesach. For example, parhelim dovash al tzibur, or soya lavod azora that we spoke about yesterday, lo karev, it's not brought in a bama. And that's the shita of Rabbi Shimon, and it's pretty clear, because otherwise, why did the Torah have to go away, the Tanakh have to go out of its way to tell me that in Gilgal they brought the Korban Pesach? Must be the Pesach is paradigmic, and it's teaching me something about which Korbanos can be brought in a Bamas Tzibur. V'idach, now it becomes a little difficult to understand all the other Tanoim that hold that a Tzibur is makriv in a Bama Gdola, even karbonos that aren't kavul emzman. If that be the case, we're back to our question, why did the Torah have to single out and teach us that in Gilgal they were makriv the Korban Pesach? And the Gemara answers, Miboy Leilichid Rabbi Yochanan, we need the pasuk to teach us the din of Rabbi Yochanan. And this din of Rabbi Yochanan is going to be derived from the emphasis of the Torah that the Korban Pesach was brought in Gilgal. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbanah, Orel, a Jewish person who's not circumcised. Rashi explains, not here but elsewhere in Masechet Nazir, that we're talking about a Yisrael who didn't circumcise himself because his brothers had died because of Milah. We're not talking about an Orel Avodas Kochavim who has no Tumah and no Azah. And here's the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Orel mekabel hazah. Now, the question is, when you have a tomei mes, in order to be mitayel the tomei mes, he needs hazah of mechatos. And that hazah has to take place twice within 7 days, with a 3-day separation period from the first hazah to the second. Now, the question is an Orel capable, assuming he's a Tomei Mes, of receiving Hazah? Would the Hazah be effective to be Metayer an Orel from Tumas Mes? And Rabbi Yochanan says yes, that an Orel could be a recipient of Hazah if he's a Tomei Mes, and then through these Hazahs he could be Metayer himself from Tumas Mes, and then after that he can go ahead and do his Milah. Now, all this is a pressing situation because we're coming very close to Pesach. Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yarden on the 10th of Nisan, and they would have to have a milah on the very next day, which is the 11th of Nisan, and that would prepare them for the Korban Pesach. Because a tummy is not allowed to bring a Korban Pesach, and certainly not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. In order to be matir the people of Israel for the Korban Pesach when they crossed the Yarden, the Pesach that we spoke about in the Pesach of Vayasu Bnei Yisrael, the Pesach of Gilgal. Now, assuming they crossed the Yarden on the 10th, on the very next day, they had Milah. Now, you might say, well, they had a Hazah after the Milah, but wait a second, the Korban Pesach has to be brought on the 14th, and you need two Hazahs, and the Hazah Shnia has to be separated from the Hazah Rishona by the minimum of 3 days. And therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, by sheer arithmetic calculation, we have to come to the conclusion that the first Hazah took place before the Milah. Because if there wasn't the first Hazah before the Milah, if the Milah took place on the 11th, there's no way that you could fit in two Hazahs with a 3-day separation in the short period of time after Milah, which took place on the 11th, of Nisan and the Korban Pesach, which of course was on the 14th of Nisan. Meaning you're only left with a 3-day period of time. That would be not be enough time to have these double hazos. And therefore, there would be no possibility for the people of Israel to be mitayer themselves from Tumas Mes on time for the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. That's the time of the Akrovas HaPesach. Because again, as we said before, the second Azah would only take place on the 15th of Nisan, because we need a 3-day period between Azah and Azah. So it must be that even though the Azah took place before the 11th of Nisan, meaning the first Azah, and the people of Israel were still in a state of Arelim, it means that an Arel could receive Hazah in order to, down the line, set him up for Taras Tumas Mes. The Gemara now brings a Braisa that's very difficult according to Reb Shimon. And then we have to clarify the Braisa. Tani Tana Kameh de Rav Ado Bar Ava. We had a Braisa that seems to reflect the Shita of Reb Shimon. And this Braisa was brought into the presence of Rav Ado Bar Ava. And here's what it says in the Braisa. Ein bein bama gdola lebama ktana le pesach v'chovos hakavu alem zman. Reflecting the sheet of Reb Shimon, the only difference between a bama gdola and a bar ktana, because again, keep in mind that a bama ktana doesn't lend itself to a karma chova. In the case of a bama gdola, we can bring a karban chova v'tzibur. And according to Reb Shimon, it's got to be a Korban Chova that fits the bill and reflects the image of Pesach, which means it's not only a Chovas Tzibur, but it's also a Kavu Alem Zman Chova. Again, in the case of a Bama Ketana, we're not Makriv a Korban Pesach at all. But in the case of a Gedola, of a Bama Gedola, we're Makriv the Korban Pesach, and that's what they did when they got to Gilgal. And other Karbanos could be brought in Gilgal if they're similar to Pesach, which means they're a tzibur with a chovas kvius, a kavulem zman. Now, wait a second. Why does the Braisa single out Korban Pesach? This is true for any Korban Chova that has kvius zman, that's kavulo zman. In other words, if this Braisa is coming to express the difference between a Bama Gedola and a Bama Ketana, it should have said simply, any carbon that is a carbon chova and it's kavua lem zman. Why do you have to mention, why do you have to single out a carbon pesach? Amalei, so the response that was given to Rav Ado Bar Ava is tisargem masnisach. In other words, interpret the Braisa in the following way. Ein bein bama gdola l'ktana l'korban pesach shekarev b'gdula v'eino b'gdola, excuse me, v'eino karev b'ktana. That the difference between a bama gdola and a bama ktana is a korban pesach. Korban pesach is only brought on a bama gdola, not on a bama ktana. And the reason for that is because pesach is eino ba b'nedava. It's only exclusively a korban chova, which you can bring in a Bama Gedola, as long as the Korban Tzibur that has a Zman Kavua, which Pesach fits that bill. Now, any Korban that comes as a Korban Chova and also as a Korban Nedava, for example, Olas Chova Shel Tzibur. Now, what's the case of an Olas Chova Shel Tzibur? We could talk about Shnei Tmidim that are brought on a daily basis. You can talk about a Korban Musaf. All these can be brought on a Bama Gedola. Why? Because they are Karbanos of a Tzibur, Karban HaTzibur, that's Tmidim Musafim, and they are Chova Kavualem Zman. Not only that, but the Karban Ola also would lend itself to a Nedava, the Ika Olas Nedava. And that Olas Nedava could be brought on a Bamas Yachid. The Ichatos, if you're going to ask me what about the Seirim of the regalim within the context and the constellation of Seirei regalim. We have chatos shekavulem zman, and they should be able to be brought on a bama gedola. Is mi ika? Do we find that a chatos is bab in a dova? So it seems from this brisa that in order to be makriv a karbon on a bama gedola, we need first of all that it be a karbon tzibur. Second of all, it's got to be a karbon chova. Again, that could include many karbonos. It doesn't have to be limited to tamidim musafim, but we have a third category, a third requirement, and that is it has to be kavulem zman. And if you take a look in the at the beginning of this brisa, it says that although a bama gedola, it doesn't lend itself to hakrava of a karban pesach or any other karban chova, but a bama gedola lends itself to hakrava of a karban tzibur, as long as it's kavulem zman. The question that we had was, why did the brisa single out karban pesach? And what we're saying is that a karban pesach is karav bigdola v'eino karav biktana. As we said before, we need a karban that's bab in a dava in order to allow bringing that karban on a bama ketana, I mean. Now, if you have a karban that's only brought b'chova, it cannot be brought on a bama ketana. However, if you have a karban that comes both b'nedava and b'chova as well, and the brisa gives the paradigmic case of olas chova, de'ika olas nedava, in such a case, an olas chova shel tzibur, which is as a chova, if it has a kviyas man like tmidim musafim, it can be brought on a bama gedola. And that's because, parallel to this olas chova the tzibur, we have an olas nedava, which can be brought even on a bamas yachid, but now we're talking about a bamas tzibur. Oh, now, if you're going to ask, what about chatos? In other words, the Seiri regalim, where also is a chovas tzibur shekavulem zman, the answer is it's missing another condition, it's not ba binedava. Why? Because chatos nedava miika, there's no such thing as a chatos nedava. And that's why the brisa went out of its way to emphasize Karban Pesach, because the brisa wants to tell you that you need permanence bob and a dove. So right away Tosus Divya Maskil to Targame raises the obvious question. Pesach is ain't a bob and a dove. So if we're trying to use Pesach as a paradigm to exclude Chatos here, as far as the Bomas Tzibur is concerned, that's very odd. You're telling me that Chatos is bumped off, even if it would be a Karban Chova Shalat Tzibur, because it's ain't a bob and a dove. What about Karban Pesach? The Tosas reinterprets the Sugya here, different than Rashi, and he says the following. He says that according to the Shita of Rab Shimon, all karbonos have to be domel lepesach in order to be brought on a bama. And pesach is karev b'bama. It means b'tzibur on the 14th of Nisan. However, there is such a thing as a karbon pesach which is ba b'yochid. And that's Pesach Sheni in a case where he couldn't bring the Pesach on Yudal B'Nisan. And so too in other Karbonos, we need the possibility of Akrava, Bein B'Tzibur, Bein B'Yochid, Ola, which is Kavul Em Zman, and Tmidim Musafim, which is also Kavul Em Zman, are Kraven B'Boma. Why can we bring these Karbonos on a Boma G'dola? It's because even a yachid could bring them binadava, an ola, can be brought b'nedava. But chatos, in the case of chatos shel tzibur, even if it's kavalem zman, like se'iri regalim, they're not craving b'bama because they're not boim b'nedava b'yachid. So again, Tosa sort of skirts the issue here because he says that we don't have to analyze whether Pesach is bar b'nedava or not, but with the existence or the, shall I say, the recognition of Pesach Sheni as an option, Pesach becomes a karbon that's brought both b'tzibur and b'yochid. Bein b'tzibur, which means Pesach b'zmano b'yadalit, and bein b'yochid in a Pesach Sheni situation. So we already have this two sides of a coin, so to speak, of karbon tzibur and karbon yochid. Now when we jump over to Shaar Karbonos, we need to equate them with the paradigmic case of Karban Pesach insofar as they have to be subject to Hakrava Bein B'tzibur, Bein B'yochid. Pesach is Bein B'yudalit B'tzibur and the Pesach Sheni B'yochid. Olos, which have a similarity to Pesach in the fact that number one, it's Kavul Em Zman. That's the case of Tmidim Musafim. And those we can bring in a Bama because those karbanos can be brought even b'yachid, like karban Pesach, which can be brought as a yachid. Chatas, on the other hand, cannot be brought in a bama because you cannot have chatas b'nedava b'yachid. That's the way Tosfos seems to learn the sugya. So now the Gemara has a difficulty. Why do we have to introduce this braisa as an olas chova? Is lukma b'minchas chova? What about the case of a minchas chova? Again, we're going to have to find a mincha that is a chovas tzibur, and it has a kfiyus man. How can you get in mincha chovas tzibur that has a kfiyus man? And the answer is chavitim, minchas chavitim. And minchas chavitim is a mincha that was brought daily by the Kohen Gadol, and it has the status of a carbon tzibur. That has to be taken under advisement, but we'll assume right now that minchas chavitim is in fact a carbon tzibur. And that's based on a sugya in Yuma, daf nunam and aleph, that chaviti kohen gadol is as far as hakrav v'bama gedola is considered not only tadir, but also is considered a carbon tzibur. That's minchas chavitim shel kohen gadol. So we can now, and let's explain the Gemara's kasha, interpret the braisa in the following way. Ein bein bama gedola ubein bama ketana ela olas chova ketmidim usafim vechein minchas chova keminchas chavitim. So the difference between a Baba Ketan and a Baba Gedola is, whereas Baba Ketan only lends itself to a Karban Nedava, a Baba Gedola lends itself to a Chovas Tzibur, if it's Kavul Em Zman. And the two examples would be number one, Tmidim Umusafim, that's a Chovas Tzibur, Kavul Em Zman. And then we could have a minchas chova, like the case of minchas chavitu, which, as we said before, is a chovas karban tzibur. And of course, a minchas chavitu kavul emzvan, because they have to be brought twice daily. And such minchas chavitim could be brought on both. Well, actually, if it's a karban tzibur, you're not going to avail yourself of the bama. I mean Baba Ketana, but rather you could be makriv them, these menachos, on a Bama Gedola, and that's because there's such a thing called a Minchas Nedava, which parallels the case of Ola in Tmidim Musafir, where there's an Olas Nedava. So the Gemara wants to know now, why did the Braisa omit mention of Mincha? And the Gemara answers, because Sava Rav Adbar Ava holds, he's the one who brought this braisa, that ain mincha b'bama, that there's no such thing as a karban mincha in a bama. And we've mentioned this in the past. We still have to get up to the sugya of Mincha Bebama. Rashi asks a question here, Dibra Maskel Kosova, why is it that Rav Ada didn't interpret the Braisa as referring to Shalmei Tzibur, which are brought on Chag HaAtzeres? There too it's a Chova Shekavu Alem Zman. It's brought on the Atzeres. And they should be Kravim Bebama Gedola. And since this is a Karban Shlamim, and other shlamim other than Shalmei Tzibur of Chag HaAtzeres are born b'nedava, which means that other shlamim can be brought in a bama ketana. Now, this shlamim can be brought on a bama gedola. Why isn't that mentioned in the brisa of Rav Ada Barav? And Rashi answers that there are two categories of shlamim: the Shalmei HaAtzeres and Shar Shlamim. And the fundamental difference between the two of them is that Shalmei HaAtzeres are kachim kachim, where shlamim in general are kachim kala. So therefore it would not be fair to say that Shalmei HaAtzeres has a parallel in Shar Shlamim that are brought in a dove, because Shar Shlamim are only kachim kala. Let's just give an overview of the shitos, the three shitos regarding Hakrovas Mincha in a Bama. Rabbi Meir, back on Kuf Yud Zayin, and he's the Tanakhama, the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Gimel, he holds that you are Makriv a Mincha b'Bama. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, and the Chachamim Rishonim, together with Rabbi Shimon, they would hold that Ein Mincha b'Bama. Okay. Now, before we go on, we should stop here and ask the question, when we say Ein Mincha b'Bama, does that apply only in Bamas Yachid, or even in a Bamas Tzibur? We also have to ask the question whether this halacha applies only to a Mincha Shal Yachid, or even to a Minchas Chovet Shal Tzibur. And here's where we want to summarize three shitos. The first shita is the Chachamim, the way Tosus interprets it, that a Minchas Yachid in a Bama Gedola would not be brought. You can't bring a Minchas Yachid in a Bama Gedola. Now, if that's the sheet of the Chacham Achronim, what do the Chacham Rishonim hold? It would seem that even the Chacham Rishonim hold like that, because the only nafkamina the Gemara came up with between the Chacham Rishonim and the Chacham Achronim was only the case of the Sachim. Other than that, they're exactly on the same page. And therefore, both sets of Chachamim would maintain that they did not bring a Minchas Yachid in a Bama Gedola. Even though, again, one could have argued that this is a carbon that's Bar B'Nedava, and for sure it should be able to be brought on a Bama Gedola, but they didn't bring a Minchas Yachid on a Bama Gedola. And again, whether that's a reflection of a universal principle that we don't bother with Yechidim on a Bama Gedola, I don't know. Okay. Now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, Tosus says that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, like the other Tanoim of the Chachamim, that Minchas Yachid is low kreva, even in a Bama Gedola, even in a Bama Tzibur. And Tosus doesn't make any distinction between a Bama Gedola and a Bama Ketana, which is a little bit difficult, because l'chora we should make a distinction between a Bama Gedola and a Bama Ketana. If you're talking about a Tzibur, they certainly brought a Karban Mincha on a Bama Gedola. If you're talking about a Karban Yachid, a Minchas Yachid, then Mechatesi, why would they bring it on a Bama Gedola? And in the case of Chavitei Kohen Gadol, as a paradigmic example of a Mincha Tzibur, Mincha Shal Tzibur, because we said the Kohen Gadol here represents the Tzibur, That for sure is brought on a Bama Gedolah. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, Yachid and Tzibur have the same din. Now, as far as Minchas Tzibur Bebama Gedolah, the Brisker Rav is quoted here as saying in his Perush Al Torah in Parshas Zemar that even to the, according to the opinion that you don't bring a mincha on a bama, even on a bama gedola, that's only a minchas yachid, but a minchas tzibur is kreva b'bama gedola. And finally, we have the third shita, which is the shita of Rav Shimon, who holds that a minchas tzibur b'bama is only if it is both a chova and a zman kavua, and again it's bab and adava. And he quotes the Achronim here that our sugya seems to indicate that according to Rav Shimon they were not makriv on a bama, even a minchas chova shel tzibur. Because the Gemara asked, why did Rav Advarava not interpret the Brisa as referring to Minchas Chavit and Shel Tzibur, which is brought in a Bama Gedola, because a Yachid is also Makriv of Minchas Nedava on a Bama. And the Gemara answers that Rav Ada holds that ain't Mincha B'Bama. It would seem that they weren't Makriv on a Bama, not a Minchas Chova Shel Tzibur, not even a Minchas Chova Shel Tzibur. And now, Rabosai, we start a brand new sugya. The Mishnah tells us what the bias look like in Shiloh. And it really didn't look all that great. It was made of walls, which are called kiros of avonim of stone. There was no tikra of any substantial substance. There was no covering. But rather, they had urios, curtains, on top. But let's not diminish the significance and the status of Shiloh. Shiloh is called Menucha, and as such, we're going to see that there's a powerful Hashras Hashchina in Shiloh. So now the Gemara wants to know, Minayin, how do we know that Mishkan Shiloh is different than the Mishkan that Moshe Rabbeinu made, Minani Mili? What's the source for this? That the kiros are made of Evan, the tikros of Yerios. The Gemara answers, Om Rab Chiyah Barab, Om Rab Yochanan, there's a stir in two psukim in Tanakh. One pasuk is in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph, and the other is in Tehillim, Perek Ein Ches. If we look in Shmuel Aleph, it says, Vatevi'ehu Beis Hashem Shiloh, meaning that Shiloh is described as a bias. From that perspective, we assume that it was built like a bais, exactly like the Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu. However, in Tehillim, Kosevech Omer, it says, Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloh Ohel Shikein Bi'odom. So the word Ohel is used to describe Shiloh. It was pitched as a tent. Uksiv, here's another pasuk, also in Tehillim Ayin Ches, and it says, Vayim Aspi Oel Yosef Ubeshevet Ephraim Lo Vachar. So we're talking about Shiloh as an Ohel. So is it a bias or is it an Ohel? The psukim there describe the history of Klal Yisrael from the time of Yitzis Mitzrayim until the choice and the appointment of David HaMelech and the Kiddush of Yerushalayim. And as a result of the Chatam of Yisrael, God gets angry on their Bamos and because of their Psilim, and he brings about the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh, a tremendous Churban, and the Kohanim who died at the sword. And then the Pasuk says, Mas be Oel Yosef. That's the Mishkan of Shiloh, which was in the Nachal of Ephraim, as we'll see soon, and that is called Oel Yosef, because Shevet Ephraim is Nachas Yosef. Now, as a result of the destruction of Shiloh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses Shevet Yehuda on Har Tzion and David Avdo as a descendant of Shevet Yehuda. Okay, so now Rabbi Chiya wants to reconcile these two descriptions that are mutually exclusive. Either it's a bias or an ohel. What is Shiloh? If you call it a bias, how can you call it an ohel? And the answer is Lo Hoysasham Tikra. It's called an ohel because it did not have a covering, a ceiling, as a full house would. Ella, all it had was Kiros Vavonim Mila Maton. Why is it called an ohel? V'yirios prusos alei milamalan ka ohel v'hi hoysa menucha. So on top, the covering was yirios, and that makes it like a pitched tent. Now, v'hi hoysa menucha, that's a little bit of an odd addition to this braisa. Some take it out or attach to the next piece of Gemara. The next piece of Gemara deals with Mishkan Shiloh from a different perspective. The Mishnah says that Kodshei Kodshim are eaten lefnim and akloim. Okay, that's not a big deal. But what's more fascinating and relevant to us today is that Kodshei Kodshim Isosheni Bechol Haroah. We're going to have a lot to talk about in defining what Kol Haroah means with regard to Shiloh and the eating of Kodshei Kodshim. Of Kodshim Kal. Minani Mili, what's the source that Kodshim Kal could be eaten b'chol haroah, anywhere from which some high vantage point you could see Shiloh? And the Gemara is going to offer a bunch of different answers to this question. We'll start with Omer of Oshia. The Pasuk says, in Parshas Rei, it says, the Omar Kra, Hishamalacha Pentale Olasecha Bechol Makom Asher Tireh. And we're going to emphasize the words Bechol Makom Asher Tireh. We're going to assume, and we have to know why, that this Pasuk is referring to Shiloh. The Gemara doesn't explain how it knows that this Pasuk is referring to Shiloh. Rashi says that this Pasuk is talking about El HaMenucha. The Pasuk itself spells out El HaMenucha. We know that Menucha is Shiloh. Now, if you recall, there's also a Pasuk that says, Lo Sasun Kechol Asher Anachnu Osim Po Hayom Ish Kol Yosh Beidem Ki Lo Bosem Ad Ata El HaMenucha Zu Shiloh El HaMenucha Hanachla Zu Yerushalayim Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lecha. And the Pesukim from then and on forward describe the Seder Biel Eretz Yisrael V'avartem Es Hayarden V'yishavtem Ba'aretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Manchil Aschem V'iniach Lachem Mikol Eivechem Misaviv Yishavtem Betach V'oya Mokom Asher Yivcha Hashem Elokecha L'shakim Bo L'shakim Shmo Shom. That's all after Kibush V'chiluk, when they reach the state of Menucha, which is Shiloh. So that what you bring, when you bring everything to Anochi Mitzav Eschem V'samachtu V'tnei Hashem Elokeichem, this is all a reference to Shiloh. And then it says, Yisham Elokha, that's our Pasuk 10, Pental Elosecha V'chol Makom Asher Tireh. So that's as far as Halah is concerned. Which means the Aktaras HaKarbon. The Torah prohibits you from bringing it b'chol makom asher tireh. So that concept called kol haroah doesn't apply to halas HaKarbon. And therefore b'chol makom asher tireh yato male, you can't be makter karbonos. You have to go into Shiloh itself, meaning into the Mishkan of Shiloh. And there you can be male karbonos on the Mizbeach in Shiloh. As opposed to Haktaras HaKarbon, which is being emphasized here, and that requires that it's not sufficient to speak about Mokom Asher Tireh. In the case regarding Achilas Basar Karbonos, there's Bechol Mokom Shataro, any location from which you have a vantage point you can see Shiloh. Now, how do we know this is a reference to Kodshim Kalim? That Kodshim Kalim could be eaten b'chol haroah. Nothing in the Pasuk mentions that we're talking about Kodshim Kalim. On the contrary, what is mentioned in the Pasuk is Olos, which are Kodshim Kodshim. So the Rambam writes in his Pirush HaMishnayis that this din, that Kodshim Kalim is Nechal B'chol Aroa, is a din that's Mekubal, that was passed on in an unbroken oral tradition from the time of the Nevi'im. And everything that we're talking about here in terms of finding a Pasuk, it's all what we call an Asmachta B'alma. And if that be the case, the difference between Kodshe Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim as far as Kol Aroa is also part of that tradition that was handed down from the Nevi'im through the generations. The Gemara is not sure about this Yalfusa. Ema Kol Mokom Ashtaroa Iyata Malo Avato Zovech B'Kol Mokom Shetira. Maybe the exclusion here is not Achilas Basar Kodshim Kalim, but rather Shchitas Kodshim Kalim. Maybe you're allowed to Shech the Karbon anywhere that's close enough to Shiloh that you could see Shiloh. And that Shchitas Karbonos of Kodshim Kalim in Shiloh would be Ksheir B'Kol Aroa. Interesting Havamina. You know, you really wonder, even if you have Kol Aroa, and maybe Kol Aroa could be considered in the wildest case as a Machne Yisrael, that's not going to help you for Shechita, because Shechita has to be done in the Azorah. So how would there be a Havamina here to be Mater Shechita B'Kol Aroa? So in the footnote of Michal Feinstein, the name of the Brisker Rav, says that B'Kol Aroa is not considered another Machne, Machne Yisrael, which would certainly not be enough for Shchitas Kodshim Kalim, which requires Azor, but rather it's a Din Miyuchad, it's a Matir of Achila. And therefore the Havmina was that we could be Matir, even Shchita, in this new category called B'chol Aroah. So the Gemara answers, Omer Avyana, Omer Kro, the Pasuk says right afterwards, it says, Ki im ba'mokom asher yivcha Hashem be'achad shvotecha, shom ta'leu losecha, v'shom ta'aseh, Kol Asher Anochi Mitzavecha. In other words, the Halodak Torah and also Visham Tase, the Asiya, which means all the Avodos of a Karman, should be done in a Mokom Asher Yivcha Hashem, not B'chol Mokom Shato Roe. And therefore, we're going to assume that we're not talking about any of the Avodos, because that would be included under Asiya, and that requires Shiloh. But rather we're talking about something post-Avodah, and that is the Achilas HaBosa. And that's Ksheir B'chol Mokom Shatoroa. That is Rav Oshia. Now we move on to another possible source for this Halacha of B'chol Aroa, as far as Achilas Kodshim Kalim. And that's Rav Avdimi Bar Chasa. He says that the source for Kodshim Kalim, the Shiloh B'chol Aroa, is because the Omer Kro, based on a Pasuk, and here we turn to Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, V'lo Tanas Shiloh. Now we have to make a few points here. First of all, there is no such Pasuk, V'lo Tanas Shiloh. You can check it out in Bar Ilan, you won't find it. But there is a pasuk which Rashi quotes here in Yoshua Perek Tezai. There it says Tanas Shiloh. It doesn't say Velo Tanas Shiloh, but it does say Tanas Shiloh. That's point number one. Now we're going to soon see that that Tanas Shiloh in Yoshua is specifically referring to the Gvul, the boundary of Nachlas Shevet Ephraim. So we'll have to keep that in mind, that Shiloh is a Mishkan that's located in the Nachl of Shevet Ephraim, Ephraim ben Yosef. But what does the word Ta'ano mean, or Ta'anas, in the Smichus? Ta'anas is Miloshon Aninus and Tsar. And basically, we find this word in Echa, Vayorev Bebas Yehuda Taniyo Vaniyo. And the drasha that we're about to learn is based on the fact that this pasuk is so unique. Where is Shiloh called Tanas Shiloh? And the answer is that the word Aniya here is Loshen Tsar and Aninus, like in the pasuk in Eicha describing Bas Yehuda. And there's a kvetch over here. Ah, when you're sad, you give a kvetch. And what is the kvetch about? Makom shekol haroa oso misaneach olav al achilas kodshim shelo. That after the churban of Shiloh, that location, which is in proximity to Shiloh, it's a makom shataroa kol sheroa oso. That makom, so to speak, in a figurative sense, is crying out, is krechting over the lack of achilas kodshim. So when they saw that, when they saw that the place of Shiloh, what they really thought about at that point, reminded them was the Achilas Kodshim. The Achilas Kodshim in that spot from which they could see Shiloh, and that's the Tanas Shiloh, the Tsar and the Aninus of Shiloh. In any event, it's clear that Achilas Kodshim was even outside Shiloh, but Kol Mokum Sheroim also. Now it's a little bit strange that the Tsar related to Shiloh is on the Achilas HaBosar. I mean, that's Anos HaGuf. It's a little bit weird to call that an Anocha, you know, a kvetch over sadness. Why weren't they sad about something more fundamental? And that is the fact that they couldn't be Makriv Karbonis at all if Shiloh was destroyed, after Shiloh was destroyed. See, quotes here of Steinemann, Zichron Levracha, who says that the Anocha is on the fact that they no longer had that place which would be defined halachically as a Roa Oso, Kosher Roa Oso place, that would engender the mitzvah of Achilas Kodshim. Now, why were they so upset about this place that was no longer a place from which you could see Shiloh? And the answer is because they no longer could eat Kodshim. And that's what brought them to the state of sadness, that they no longer had that place from which they could see Shiloh. And if that's what brought them into the state of sadness, we're certainly not discussing here the Hakrova aspect, but rather the loss of that place which is called Roa Oso. We're talking about the Achilas Kodshim. Now the pasuk that we mentioned earlier from Yoshua to Zion opens with the words Vanisov HaGvul, Vinasav HaGvul Mizrocha Tanas Shiloh. Tanas with an aleph, Tanas. And according to the drasha here, the Gemara is saying that this is the Gvul, this is the boundary of Ephraim, which passes over on the eastern side to Shiloh. So the eastern side of the Gvul, of the boundary of Ephraim, Nachas Ephraim, is Shiloh. And the Sofa Mokom, the end of the place from which you can see Shiloh, and where they were Misaneach and Achilas Kodshim, was there, in the entire area of the Shetach that's called B'chol HaRoa, Mi Mizrach L'Shiloh, to the east of Shiloh, which entered into the Gvul of B'nei Ephraim. Now we're up to the third possible drasha, a third source for the din of Kol Mokom Shata Roa. And this is Rabbi Avo Amar, and he based himself on the bracha that Yaakov Avinu bestowed upon Yosef at the end of Chumash Bereishis in Vayechi Perek Memtes, Bein Paras Yosef, Bein Paras Alei Ayin. Now let's just say the following. There's a unique relationship between Shiloh and Yosef. Again, later on we'll see in the sugya that the real bailus, so to speak, over Shiloh as a mokom ashras hashkina is Binyamin, not Yosef. But Yosef has a certain piece of the pie, just like we saw in Mizbeach, that although it's really all Binyamin, but nevertheless there was a strip of Yehuda that went into the eastern side of the Mizbeach. Here too, on the eastern side, Yosef, meaning the Bnei Ephraim's Nachla, cuts in and meets up with Shiloh. Now, we have this pasuk. Again, when we're talking about Ephraim, we're talking about Yosef, his father. And when you go on to Yosef, it says, Alei Ayin. Now, the meaning of this phrase, Ayin, here, in this context, this word Ayin, is a twofold meaning. First of all, we're going to see that one of the great dimensions of Yosef HaTzadik is that he controls his eyes. And that's in the mice of Eishes Potiphera. And if you read the next line in the Gemara says, Ayin shel ratzal lozun ilanes lihanes midover shenu shaloh. So he overcomes any and disciplines any allurement, any pull towards Eishes Potiphar. That's his control over the eye. He doesn't even look to be Nene. But then we have another meaning to the word Ayin. As a ribui, for the part where you're allowed to eat kodshim, and that's called b'chol roa ba'ayin, anything that you could see, any location, any place from which you could see with your eye, Shiloh. And because Yosef was the one who's mesalik his ayin, he removed his eye, his sight, his gaze from Eishes Potiphar, therefore ben parat, parat Yosef, ben parat alei, Alei Ayin. He controls his eye. And the Alei Ayin here means Tizke, as a reward, you'll be Zocha, that in your, meaning in the, in your descendants, comma, apostrophe, Nachla, territory, Tochal Kemole Eineha, you'll be able to eat Kodshim as much as you can see with your eyes, meaning as far away from Shiloh as you might be, but as long as you can see Shiloh. So Yosef was Zoche that the Kodshim of Mishkan Shiloh, meaning the Kodshim Kalam, I should say, of Mishkan Shiloh would be eaten B'chol HaRoah, and B'chol HaRoah includes that area of Nachlas B'nei Ephraim. That's all a reward for Yosef, who is in control of his eye, and therefore the Kodshim will be Necha B'chol HaRoah, anywhere the eye can see. Then we go on to the last possible source. This is Rav Yosef Rav Chanina Amar, and he's going to quote a pasuk with regard to the bracha of Shevet Yosef, very similar to Rav Avo, but here we're at the end of Sefer Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu is bestowing a bracha to Shevet Yosef. Uritzon shochni sneh. Once again, we're going to assume that this is a reward for Yosef in the context of Eishes Potiphar. He was miskaber on any sort of allurement to Eishes Potiphar. That's the greatness of Yosef that we're focusing on. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, Ayin shel rotzo leonos midover sheni shelo tizke v'tochal bein hasnuim. And the phrase rotzon, or the word rotzon I should say, is a reference to Yosef, who had such a strong will that he would not enjoy gazing at Eishes Potiphar. But shochnei sneh, and the word sneh here means snuim. Snuim means those at the parsha Mechiras Yosef who hated Yosef. Again, we have to figure out, it's a little bit of a stretch, how you figure that out. How do you interpret this phrase, shochnei sneh, referring to the snuim, the other shvatim. But what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina is saying is that there will be an Achilas Kodshim at the time of Shiloh between the Gvul of Yosef and the Gvul of other Shvatim who are Snuim, again, it's hard to say snuim, it should be sonim, I'm not sure about that, but those who had enmity towards Yosef and they sold Yosef. In other words, because Yosef was misgaber on any sort of allurement with regard to the parasha of Eishes Potiphar, therefore he was zochel at the kodshim kalim of Mishkan Shiloh, would be eaten in his chelek, and also spilling over, as it were, into the boundaries of the other shvatim that were close to Mishkan Shiloh, and they could see Mishkan Shiloh from that shetach, from that territory. So when it says uritzon here, it means al yedei shasa ritzon amakom shochni. Is a reference to Kodshei Mishkan Shiloh, and Sneh means that the Kodshei Mishkan Shiloh will be eaten up until the Shetach of other Shvarim, of other Shvatim that had a Re'iyas HaRoah, and they could reach with that Re'iyah Shiloh itself. Now the Gemara wants to address the following issue. What exactly is Bechol HaRoah? How far or how close is a location valid for Achilas Kodshim Kalim? Tana, we learned it in Braisa. On this phrase, Bechol HaRoah, Sha'omru, what exactly is the Shir Makom for Achilas Kodshim Kalim in Shiloh? Roah es Kulo. The Braisa opens up with the opinion that you have to be able to see the entire Shiloh. We'll see later on from a Papa, it doesn't mean the entire Shiloh, Lav Dafka, but it means you should see almost Kulo, and that's called Kol Shu Roah. And therefore, Velo HaMafsik, there should be no Dover HaMafsik, Beino, between him, Lebeino, and the Mishkan of Shiloh. Nothing should be a barrier that could prevent him from seeing Shiloh. So we're very, you know, very tangible at this point. He really has to see Shiloh. Amalei Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim l'Rabbi Lazar, Azbir l'cha. I'm going to give you an example to elucidate the intention of this braisa. Kigon, what does Roah Shiloh mean? Beknishta de Ma'on. Apparently this base, Knesset, in a location, a town called Ma'on, is close enough to Shiloh and high enough on a hilltop that you could see Shiloh from that hilltop where the base Knesset is, and there's no Dover HaMafsik. So you can imagine yourself, all the farmers, or lots of farmers who are coming during this 369-year period of Shiloh, they're coming to eat Maaser Sheni from their various fields, and they're coming into Shiloh. Or, for example, if they're bringing Korban Shlomim and the like in the Mishkan of Shiloh, now they're eating their Kodshim Kalim, excuse me, and they're going up to the synagogue. And there must have been a lot of picnic benches over there. And there they're eating their Kodshim Kalim and Maaser Sheni. Why? Because they could see from this base, Knesset in Ma'on, a clear view on a clear day, Shiloh, the Mishkan of Shiloh, without any barrier that would block their vision. Now, as far as Ma'on is concerned, and exactly where it's located, Rashi points out that this Beis Knesset is mentioned quite a few times in Shas, in Masechet Shabbos, Masechet Yevamos, Bava Kamma, Chulin, and elsewhere. And it's always indicated in all of Shas that Rabbi Yochanan was in that Beis Knesset. And that's a little bit odd because Ma'on, according to the Yushalmi, was close to Tveria. And that's where Rabbi Yochanan lived, near Tveria, together with his outstanding Talmidim, Rabbi Shimon Eliakim, Rabbi Lazar, and others. And therefore, if he's near Tveria, that's where Ma'on is, how is it possible to see all the way to Shiloh? Shiloh's in a whole different area. It's much closer to Yerushalayim, for example. He's all the way up north. But what perhaps the Gemara has in mind is that just like from Ma'on you could see Tveria without any mafsik, so too from any place where you could see Shiloh without any mafsik, you could eat Kodshim Kalin. That's called Kol Aroth. Keep in mind again that Ma'on, if it's right near Tveria, is on a mountaintop above Tveria, which gives you a beautiful view, an unobstructed view of Tveria. Now we have a bunch of sfeikas as far as this dinner kol aroth. Omer of Papa. Roe sha'omru, kol aroth sha'omru chachamim lo roe kulo elo roes miktsaso. He doesn't have to see the entire Mishkan of Shiloh. That's almost impossible. You know, you need a helicopter for that. But by Rav Papa, if you can see Miktsaso, well, what happens? Omed v'roa, but Yoshev eino roa. Now, it's not a flat view if he's sitting on a bench, but when he's standing, he could see Shiloh from the standing position. My, in other words, is it enough to say that since he's standing and he could see Shiloh in that standing position, therefore he's considered Kol Aroth? Now, there are a number of different variations here of how to interpret this suffix of Rav Papa Omed V'Roa, Yoshe V'Eino Roa. One interpretation is that we're dealing with the question of Achila Bamida, which means that there's a tzad to say that he shouldn't be eating. Let me just read to you the nusach here. Shelo yochal hu me'achar she'ilu ha'yoshev lo yoroa shilo. He's actually standing and eating, but if he would sit down, he would not see Shilo. And the derech achil is usually to sit down. But the Gemara assumes that he's got to be standing. And that's why the suffix is such a pressing suffix, because you're not allowed to eat kodshim in a sitting position. The other possible way of interpreting it is to say that the Gemara is actually, the nidon here in the Gemara is about achila b'yeshiva, that you're allowed to eat kodshim kalim in a sitting position, but now he can't see Shiloh in that sitting position. If he would have stand, if he would have stood up, he would certainly see Shiloh, and certainly he could eat there, because he sees Shiloh, but now he's sitting in position. He's allowed to eat in a sitting position, but the only problem is he considered a roa, kol aroth? Now, the Sfasemis offers a third possibility, that the Gemara is really vacillating about two things, two scenarios. One is, can he eat be a yeshiva? And the question here revolves around the fact that had he stood up, he would be able to see. What should we say, that he's not allowed to eat in that position? And for that matter, even if he stands, he's not allowed to eat in that position, because if he would sit, he wouldn't see it. Now we're going to soon see that we end up with an Ibai Delo Ifshito with Teiku on this. And therefore it doesn't surprise us that the next part of the sugya is Boy Rabbi Yirmiyah. Boy Rabbi Yirmiyah is only that's almost a shoo-in for a Teiku. Omeid al Gabi Anachal. Viroa, he sees Shiloh when he's in a nachal. Now, a nachal is a little bit below ground, but there's the sfas ha-nachal, meaning he has to go out of the nachal to get onto dry land, and when he goes on shore, he climbs up to a higher position, but right now he's in the lower position. Is Vieno Ro, as long as he's betoch anachli, he doesn't see Shiloh. My, what's the din of this person who's in the nachal and he can't see Shiloh? Is he allowed to eat kachim kalim because his location is also considered kol aroth? We view the nachal as one entity, and on the shore, when he goes out of the nachal, out of the water, he's got to climb up, and he reaches a high place where he'll see Shiloh. What should we say, that right now he has to be in a makom where he can see Shiloh in order to allow him to eat? And the Choknosan says that this question is really built as an imtim to Lomar on the previous Sofeg. Since if he was standing, he would see Shiloh, and therefore he's allowed to eat even in a sitting position, if we assume that way. What happens if he's standing in a Nachal? Here he's got to really change his position in order to be able to see. You know, we're talking about Omei V'Yoshev, okay, but it's that location on the globe, if you put an X on the ground, that's a place from which he can see Shiloh. The question is if he's standing or if he's sitting here, he's got to really change his location. And in order to justify the tzad that would say that he is a roe when he's in the Nachal, we're going to have to say that the Nachal itself is batel to the Sfas HaNachal. But he quotes here Panim Me'iros. And the Panim Me'iros says that the Sufek is an Imtim Salomar, that if you need to see Shiloh, even in a yeshiva position, it's not enough to say I can see it while I'm standing. Now the Gemara is a Sufek about the case of Nachal. Should we say the same thing in Nachal, that he has to actually see it? Or in the case of Nachal, he doesn't have to see it, because if this Nachal was a Mishar, it was a straight area, it wasn't below ground, he would be able to see it. And therefore, even in Yeshiva, in the Nachal, it's considered a Mokom Aro. Teku, and all these Sfeikos remain outstanding, and therefore you'd probably want to be machmir, because you don't want to eat kudshim, kalim, or maiser sheni outside of kolaroa. Now, I would ask you the following question, you know, is this hilchos olam mashicha? Because we're not really, you know, it's why is Shiloh so relevant to us in all these sfeikos? You're going to have to assume that some of these sfeikos could have an impact on other issues besides Shiloh. Okay. Now we get to the sugya that I alluded to earlier about Hashras Hashchina. Ki Osir Rav Dimi came to Bavel, Omar, and he said in the name of Rebbe, Shlosha Makomos Sharsa Shchina Al Yisrael. Three places in Eretz Yisrael where there was Hashras Hashchina. Now, there was also Hashras Hashchina in the Mishkan, but that's in the Midbar, so that's not going to even be listed here amongst the three, because we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. And we can mention, in this context, Gilgal. I don't know why Gilgal doesn't appear here, because there was Hashras Hashchina in Gilgal. But maybe you could say that since Gilgal was during that 14-year period before the Kibush and Chiluk was completed, it's not mentioned here because we're talking about HaMenucha from the period of Menucha and Eilat. So the first of the three is going to be Shiloh, Nov, V'Givon. And Shiloh seems to be one place, one of the three locations. There we'll have a whole discussion about Hashras Hashchina and Shiloh. There's Nov, V'Givon, and then Gilgal as well, except for the problem that Gilgal is before Kibush V'Chiluk, so it's before El HaMenucha, whereas Nov V'Givon is after the destruction of Shiloh, after El HaMenucha. And then finally we get to Beis Olamim, and that's the Beis HaMikdash established by Shlomo Melch in Yerushalayim. There's Hashras Hashchina. Now the Keren Ora points out that the significance of Hashras Hashchina in all these cases is what's called the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel B'Mo'adim. Would there be an Aliyah L'Regel to Shiloh, to Nov V'Givon? And the answer is yes. Why? Because it's Hashras Hashchina. Big chiddush of the Keren Ora. Now Rebbe continues, and he says, "Ubekulon lo sharsa ela b'chelik binyamin." Who has exclusive rights and possession of Hashras Hashchina, Mokom Hashras Hashchina? That's Binyamin. And this comes to express the concept of the pasuk Yedid Hashem Yishkon Levetach Olav, which is at the end of Chumash, and this is going to be Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha that he bestows upon Binyamin. Yedid Hashem Yishkon Levetach Olav Chofev Kalayom Ubein Ksefav Shachin. This pasuk is dealing with Hashras Hashchina on Klal Yisrael in the Mishkan and in the Migdash. And that Hashras Hashchina will take place in Shevet Binyamin, he's called Yedid Hashem Yishkon Levetach Olav. Now, the word Chofef here in this pasuk, Chofef Olav Kol Hayom, is that one pinpointed, singled out word that refers to Hashras Hashchina. The Chafifa here, the covering, so to speak, the encircling, enveloping of Klal Yisrael, Olav, is the Hashras Hashchina. And Olav here refers to the Chelek of Binyamin. Lo Yu Ela Bechelko Shel Binyamin. And what the Gemara is going to do is go through the various places and see if indeed all these places of Hashras Hashchina were located in the Chelko Binyamin. And the Gemara says the following: Ki Ozil Abaye Omra Kami Rav Yosef. Abaye reached his Rebbe, Rav Yosef, and he told him over this shtikl Torah that he heard from Avdimi, and Rav Yosef was not happy with it. Omar, he declares about Abaye, Chad Braha Velei Lechailil. Chailil was the father of Abaye, and he only was Zoche to one son, Velo Miskin, and he didn't really do a good job. He's saying something that's not true. By the way, this Chailil never lived to see his son Abaye, because Abaye was born an orphan. His mother died at childbirth. In any event, Rav Yosef says, is it really possible, almost as a rhetorical question, that the Shras Hashchina was only in the Chelek of Binyamin? And if that be the case, you're going to have to assume that the first of these three places mentioned, enumerated by Rebbe, is the Mishkan Shiloh. The Mishkan Shiloh was only in the Chelek of Binyamin. Vaksiv, the Pasuk in Tilim, actually two Pesukim in Tilim in the same Perkai in Ches, says, Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloh, Ksiv, Vayim Aspi Ol Yosef, Ubeshevet Ephraim Lo Bachar. So this capital in Tilim, which is dedicated to Mishkan Shiloh, indicates that Mishkan Shiloh was in the Oel of Yosef, in the Shevet of Ephraim, which means we're talking about Mishkan Shiloh in the Nachal Ephraim, not in the Nachal Binyamin. So Omer Rav Adar comes to defend and protect Rav Dimi, the original Drasha, which is quoted, by the way, in the name of Rebbe, which is a little bit odd here that Rav Yosef is attacking Abaye, who's merely repeating what he heard from Rav Dimi in the name of Rebbe. And the answer is, my kokashale. He doesn't understand bechlal the kash of Rav Yosef, why he objected about the possibility of Hashras Hashchina, Mishkan Shiloh, in Binyamin, Dilma, because it's quite possible that there was Hashras Hashchina bechelik Binyamin. However, what Yosef got was V'sanhedria gedola bechelik Yosef. And we find a basis for this, to assume that the Sanhedrin HaGdola was in the Chelek of Yosef. Mina matzinu bebeis olamim, in the Beis HaMikdash, we find that the Shechina was Shora bechelko she Binyamin. The Kodesh Kadoshim was certainly, and most of the Azor was in the Chelek of Binyamin. But Sanhedrin HaGdola was in the Chelek of Yehuda. And In the case of the Harabayis, what we know is that there was a neshika, there was almost an overlap or a meeting point between Nachlas Yehuda and Nachlas Binyamin zu bezu, and the chelik of Nachlas Yehuda and the chelik of Nachlas Binyamin met each other on the Mizrach side, which includes the Ezrus Noshim, the Ezrus Yisrael, and the Sanhedrin. Up until the Mizbeach was Nachlas Yehuda. On the Meirav side, in the western side, where the Makom HaMizbeach was, and the Ulam, and the Heichal, the Kodesh Kodashim, that was all located in the Chelek of Binyamin. Now, as far as the Sanhedrin is concerned, we have to understand where the Sanhedrin was located. Rashi in Shmos has a whole discussion in Perek Chaf Alf, Lom HaNispecha Parshas Dayonim, LeParshas Mizbeach, Lomar LeChoshetosim Sanhedrin Eitzel Mizbeach, and the Sanhedrin was in the Azora, as it says, Vekamta V'Elisa, but it had to be in the Chelek of Yehuda, because of the Pasuk at the end of Breishis, Mechokek Bimbein Raglov. So that part of the Azora, which is in the east, is in Nachla Shevet Binyamin, and that's where the Sanhedrin HaGdola was. Again, I'm not exactly sure where the Sanhedrin sat. It's the Lishkas HaGozis. Rashi seems to assume that that was in the Azorah. I'm not sure about that. And here too, with regard to Mishkan Shiloh, we have two psukim. We have one pasuk, Bank Seifav Shachain, which means that the Shechina is Shorah in the Chelik Binyamin for all time, even and certainly including Mishkan Shiloh. And Vayimasbi Oel Yosef is Shevet Ephraim Lo Bachar. That's the kiyum of the rest of the Mishkan Shiloh, which was in Nachlas Ephraim. So again, I'm not exactly sure which part of the Mishkan of Shiloh was in Nachlas Ephraim, where exactly the border was, but there was a piece of the territory of Ephraim that sliced in, that overlapped, that cut into, you know, it wasn't just a straight line, it cut into the Shevet of Binyamin, and that's where part of the Mishkan Shiloh was located. That's the Pasuk in Tehillim, Vayimaspi Ol Yosef B'Shevet Ephraim. Amar Leis, Rav Yosef says to Rav Ada, Hochi Hashta. In other words, is it really possible to say what you're saying? There's not even a fair equation here to what happened in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. There, the Shechina was in Chelek Binyamin, the Sanhedrin was in Chelek Yehuda, Hossam in the Beis HaMikdash. You can tell me that since Mekarva and Nachlos, the Shvatim of Yehuda and Binyamin, their Nachlos were close to each other with Krovos, is Gabi Adadi, Zuzu, they one near the other. They met at the point of the Migdash, and therefore it's very possible that the Beis HaMikdash would be split into two Nachlos. And we said the eastern side was in Shevet Yehuda, and the western side was in Shevet Binyamin. Hacha, however, if you're talking about the Mishkan of Shiloh, Mima Karavan, is it really true that Shiloh is close to Nachlas Binyamin, and it's also close at the same time to Nachlas Yosef? Again, the fact that it's near Yosef, that's explicit, and we have no problems with that. The issue here, and the reason why Rav Yosef was objecting to this tradition of Rav Ada in the name of Rebbe, is because Rav Yosef was of the opinion, he understood based on the psukim in Tehillim, that Mishkan Shiloh was not near Chelek Binyamin. Hayitochen, is it possible to say that the Shechina was Shorah in Chelek Binyamin, even in the case of Mishkan Shiloh, when the Pasuk says the Mishkan Shiloh was in Nachlas Ephraim and not in Nachlas Binyamin? Nachlas Binyamin was at a distance. So the Gemara says, Hochinami Mekarvan, that in truth, the Nachla of Binyamin and Nachla of Ephraim were close to each other. The Mishkan Shiloh was so overlapped over both. Kida Omar, Rabbi Chama bar Rabbi Chanina, just like Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Chama bar Chanina has this principle with regard to the Beis Mikdash of Ritzua Yotzeis, meaning the boundaries are not vertical lines, you know, straight lines, but rather Ritzua Yotzeis Michalko Sheyuda V'Nichneses L'Chalko SheBinyamin. We say that the Chalek of Binyamin is on the southwestern side, whereas the Chalek of Yehuda is on the eastern side, the northeast. So therefore, we have a piece of Chalek of Yehuda that juts out and cuts into the southern side of the Mizbeach on the west. Ubahayim Mizbeach Banui. And there was no Yesod on the Durham side, because that was in the Shevet of Yehuda. Do we have that right? Yeah. So the that part of Yehuda that cut into the southern side and actually entered into the Durham and the Mizbeach, that's where the Yisod Dromi, there was no Yisod Dromi, because there was no Yisod outside of Chelek Binyamin. For Binyamin HaTzadik, who saw this all happening, Beruach HaKodesh, that's going to happen down the line, and there's going to be a Ritzuah, a strip of territory of Nachlas Yehuda that cuts into the Nachla of his descendants, after Chalukas HaAretz, is Mitztar Olel Levola. He was very upset about this, Binyamin. He was hoping that it wouldn't actually happen, but he saw in Ruach HaKodesh that it was going to happen. In any event, getting back to Shiloh, Hochenami here too, says Rabbi Chama, Ritzua Hoysa Yotzis Michelkel Shel Yosef, and we're talking about the Nachlas Ephraim here of Yosef, Umagia, and it reached Chelko Shel Binyamin. And we had a long discussion before why Yosef was Zoche to this, and that's because of his control of his eyes, the schus that he had in disciplining his eyes, in the mice of Eishes Potiphar. So this Ritzua that juts out from the Chelik of Yosef, it reaches Chelko Shel Binyamin, it enters into it. And therefore we can appreciate what Rav Dimi was saying, that the Shechina was Shorah only, exclusively in Chelik Binyamin. And even though the Pasuk says that Shiloh was in the Nachla of Yosef, Nachla of Ephraim, and the answer is that that part of the of Mishkan, that Mishkan Shiloh was Eino Chinami in the Chelik of Binyamin, but there was a certain Chelik, a certain section between Binyamin and Nachlas Yosef, with the Ritzua going into Nachlas Yosef, cutting into Chelik Binyamin, and at that Ritzua, there was a meeting with Mishkan Shiloh, Vahainu Dechsiv, and therefore Shiloh is called in the Poskin Yoshua Tezai that we mentioned earlier, Tanas Shiloh, the Tana Loshen Aninus in Tsar, is because that reflects the Tsar of Binyamin for that Ritzua that would cut into his Chelik in the Mishkan and Shiloh. So in Beis Hamikdash, he's upset, Binyamin's upset about the trespassing, so to speak, of Shevet Yehuda. And in Shiloh, he's upset about the trespassing of Shevet Yosef, of Nachlas Binyamin, of Nachlas Ephraim. And now the Gemara claims that this statement of Rav Dimi really is a machlokas tannoim. In other words, Rav Dimi is saying that the Shechina was only in the Chelik of Binyamin. Kitanoi, the Gemara says, we have a Braisa. This Braisa is going back to the Pasuk in Zos HaBroch at the end of Dvarim, LeBinyamin Omar Yedid Hashem Yishkol LeVetech HaLov Chofech Kol Hayom Uben Kseifav Shachem. And the two Tanoim are going to take apart this Pasuk, dissected piece by piece. The Pasuk, as the Gemara said before, is referring to Hashras HaShechina Bechelko Shel Binyamin. And the Tanakama is going to interpret the Pasuk in the following way. Chofef Alav, and we're talking about Hashras HaShechina, Zeh Migdash Rishon, and the Shechina is Shora in the Chelik of Binyamin. Kol Hayom, right, it says Chofef Alav Kol Hayom, Zeh Migdash Sheni. So in the Beis HaMikdash HaSheni, again, the Hashras HaShechina is in the Chelik of Binyamin. Ubein Kseifav Shachen, the end of the Pasuk, El Yemos HaMashiach. Notice there's no mention of Shiloh, because this Tana, the Tanakama, does not reflect the Shita of Rav Dimi, but we're going to see Rebbe in just a second. Now, El Yemos HaMashiach, in other words, there's going to be a closeness to the Shechina, what we call a dveikus to the Shechina, on a very profound level, more than anything in this world, at the time of Mashiach. And that's Bein Kseifav Shachen. Bein Kseifav Shachen means the Shechina is mamish on, it's a chibur gadol. It's not just chofef alav, where it circles him, but rather it's a chibur gadol, a Bein Kseifav Shachen. Rebbe Omer, he has a different way of interpreting the Pesukim. Chofef Olav Zeh Olam HaZeh. And that means that wherever there was Hashras HaShechina in this world, it was always in the Chelik Minyamin. And that includes not just the two Batei Mikdashos, it includes Shiloh, it includes Nov, it includes Givon. all the Hashros Hashkina were always Bechelik Shel Binyamin. That reflects the Shita of Rav Dimi that we've been studying. Then it says Kol Ayom Elimos HaMashiach Ubenk Seifov Shachin, which is the most profound connection in Dveikus with Shkina, Ze Olam Abba. Because Yimos HaMashiach are basically the same as our life now. The only difference, Gemara says, is Shivud Malchius. And therefore the Bein Seifav Shachin, which we say was the greatest Chibra, the most intense and profound Dveikus, that has to be left for Olam Haba. In any event, the bottom line is that what we want to get out of this price is that Rav Dimi is very appropriate for Rebbe, whereas the Tanakhama assumes that only in the Bati Mikdashas was there Hashras Hashkina Bechelet Binyom, but not in Shiloh, Nov, and Givon. Tana Rabbanan. We're going to learn in a Braisa, and this is a lot of historical calculations about the number of years that the Mishkan was in each one of the various places. So first of all, how do we know that Yimei Oel Moed Sheba Midbar is Arboim Shana Chasar Achas? This is the easy one. We start with the easy one. That the Hashras Hashchina and the existence of the Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu the Midbar was 39 years. And how do we know this? Yimei Oel Moed Sheba Gil... Oh, so that's one question, which that's the easy one. And then we get to a more complicated question. Yimei Oel Moed Sheba Gilgal War Arbo Asrei Shana Sheva Shekavshu v'Sheva Shecholku. So the Mishkan was in Gilgal, we'll call it a Bama Gedola, Bama Tzibur in Gilgal for 14 years, the 7 years of Kibush Eretz Yisrael, the 7 years of Chiluk Eretz Yisrael. Then we get to Nov Givon, Yimei Ol Mod B'Nov Givon Chamishim v'Sheva Shonim, 57 years. And if you add the 39 together with the 7 and 7 and 57, you end up with 110 years. Now add the first year of Yetzias Mitzrayim until HaKomas HaMishkan, and then you have 111 years. So from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the Binyan Beis HaMikdash was all told 480 years. And this is recorded in the Poskim Malachim Aleph, in the Parsha of Hakomas HaMishkan, Chanukas HaMishkan of Shlomo Melech, of the Bais Rishon. It says, Vayhi b'shmonim shonav arbamiel shonu letzeis b'nei Yisrael me'etz Yisrayim, b'shonu revias b'chodesh ziv, hu chodesh asheni limloch shlomo al Yisrael, vayiven bayis l'ashem. So that took a few months, and that gives us the number 480 years. So it's 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the Binyan HaBayis. And if we calculate this, then we'll figure out how long the Mishkan was in Shiloh. Right? Because what we have is 480. We're going to subtract from that 480. What was the total there? 111? 111 is 300 and, just 1 second, 369. Yishen Ishtairu Lishilo Shloshmeos Vishivim Shana Chaser Achas. He calls it 370 minus 1. In other words, the minyan, the total number of years which the Ol Moed stood in Shiloh was 369 years. Now let's go back to the beginning of this price. Yimei Ol Moed Shemimbar Boim Shana Chaser Achas, 39 years, the Ol Moed of the Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar stood. Minol, and how we know this? The Omer Mar. In another price it says, B'Shana Rishona, the first year after Yetzias Mitzrayim, Asa Moshe Es HaMishkan, U'B'Shana Shniyah Hukam HaMishkan. So it took a full year to prepare the Mishkan, and it was only established, it was erected in the second year, V'Shalach Moshe Meraglim, and immediately in that second year, he sent the Meraglim, the scouts, to scout out the land. So the Shiluach Meraglim, that took place in the second year. So since Moshe Rabbeinu established the Mishkan in the second year and they were in the Midbar for 40 years, obviously the Mishkan stood for 39 years. Now we get to Gilgal, and we said that Gilgal stood for 14 years. Sheva Kishikivshu V'Sheva Shechilku. Midnolan. How do we know these two numbers, the 7 as far as Kibush and the 7 as far as Chiluk? So first we'll start with the 7 of Kibush. And this we're going to derive from a number of different calculations and variables, starting with Kolev. Kolev declares in Yoshua Perek Yudalid, when he asks at the in the aftermath of Chalukas Eretz Yisrael, I shouldn't say in the aftermath, but at the beginning of the Chaluk of Eretz Yisrael, in the aftermath of Kibush Eretz, and he wants the city of Hebron. That's where his love is, the city of Hebron. You may remember that even when he's on his way to scout the land, he stops off in Hebron. Ir Ha'avos, right? And Kolev declares in that pasuk in Yoshua Yudal, Ben Arboim Shana Nochi, Bishloach Moshe, Eved Hashem Osi, Mikodesh Barnea, L'Ragel, Sa'aretz, V'Hashem, Osol, Devar, Kashem, Lodvavi. So we know that Kolev was 40 years old at the time that he gets sent to scout out the land. Okay, so he's 40 years old. Now again, the scouting out the land we just established was in the second year after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it'll be another 38 years until they enter into Eretz Yisrael. So if you add the 38 years to the 40 years of Kalev's life at the time that he was sent on the scouting enterprise, then you get 78. And then you're going to have to, now, at what age does Kolev request Ir Hebron, meaning at the end of the 7 years of Kibush? So that's going to be at the age of 85, as we'll soon see. If it's at the age of 85, and Kolev is 78 at the time of Knisa Eretz Yisrael, and 78 means the 38 years since the Meraglim period and the 40 years that he was at the time of the sent as the Meraglim, so that's 78 and 7 is going to be 85. So if we can prove that Kolev was 85 years old when he requested the city of Hebron in the Chalukas Arts, and we know that Kibush took 7 years because he was 78 when he entered into Eretz Yisrael. So the pasuk says in Yoshua Yudalev, V'ato hine hechya Hashem osi kasher diber ze arba'im v'chamesh shana. In other words, he starts his presentation by reviewing history and saying, I was 40 years old when I was sent on the trip of the Meraglim, and now God has given me another 45 years to live. So Kolev is explicit about the fact that now, when the Kibush period has ended, he is 85 years old, he's requesting the city of Hebron. Ki avarye li yardein bar kamahavi. Now, if we can only figure out what was Kolev's age when he entered into Eretz Yisrael, when he crossed the Yarden together with the entire nation of Israel, Bar Shivim V'tamni, he was 78 years old. Because the first pasuk tells me that at the second year following Yetzias Mitzrayim, when the Meraglim was sent, he was 40 years old. They were in the Midbar another 38 years, so if he was 40 plus 38, that gives us 78. Uka Omar, now he's saying that Ben Chamesh Ushmonim Shana, I'm now today 85 years old, and it means that from 78, my age 78 until today, from the age in which I crossed the yard and entered into the land, and today I'm 85 requesting in the Chalukah that I receive Hebron, that means it took 7 years until the conquest period ended.
Hare Sheva Shekovshu, the Gemara says. But Sheva Shekholku Minayin, we still have to answer another question. How do we know that it took 7 years until they finally inhabited the land, settled the land, Ishtachas Teino, Ishtachas Gafno? So Ibai Semi, the first answer is a little bit odd. Midas Sheva Kovshu is Sheva Nami Chilku. Since it took 7 years to capture the land, it makes sense that it would take an equal number, 7 years, to divide up the land. Now, how does the Gemara know such a thing? Rashi calls it a Svar of the Alma. The Achmarim try to suggest that Kibush Eretz Yisrael, which was all miraculous and supernatural, could have taken place in one day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon was that it should be stretched out over a 7 year period. And Chalukas Eretz Yisrael likewise could have been miraculous, instantaneous. Hashem wanted to stretch out in a sort of normal period of time, which would be a 7 year period of time. Fine, but now Ibois Eimah. Here's where the Gemara gets a little bit more complicated in trying to prove that the Chalukas Eretz Yisrael took 7 years. Ibai Seima, I'll give you another way of deriving 7 years of Chalukas Eretz Yisrael. Midalomish kachasle. If you don't agree, if you don't admit that it was 7 years of Chiluk, then you will not be able to sustain one of the various nevuos of Yechezkel, this one in Perek Mem of Yechezkel, a nevuah bi esrim v'chameh shana legalusenu b'rosh hashana b'asar lachodesh. Now, this phrase, b'rosh hashana b'asar lachodesh, is a little bit strange, because Yom Kippur is on asar lachodesh, Rosh Hashanah is on the first of the month of Tishrei, but it means we blow the shofar of Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of the month, in the year of Yovel. So this nevuah begins clearly on Yom Kippur of Yovel. And then Yechezkel says, Bi-arba'asrei shana achar huksa ha'ir, which means 14 years following the Churban of Yerushalayim. Now I see there's a note here, I'm trying to see. No. That's not relevant. So what we see is that this nevuah took place on Yom Kippur of Yovel, when they blow the shofar, and that's when the avodim go free, and the sodos, you know, that was sold go back to the original owners, and that's Shnas HaYovel. Now, we can derive from this pasuk that 14 years after Churban Yerushalayim was Shnas HaYovel, which means that if in terms of the previous Yovel, the Churban takes place on the 36th year into the Yovel, because it's only 14 years later that the Yovel takes place. So 14 years after Churban is Yovel, that means the Churban can be identified as the 36th year in the Yovel. Now, from the time that Bnei Yisrael entered into the land of Eretz Yisrael until the Churban Habayis, the first Churban, I mean, there were 850 years. Now, in order to work out this number 850, we'll try to just summarize that. And we start with the fact that Binyan Beis HaMikdash was 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. You have to subtract the 40 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until they entered into Eretz Yisrael, and then you have to add the 410 years of the Beis HaMikdash, and when you add those two numbers together, 480 and 400 and 410, so what we have is 850. Oh, because you have to subtract the 40 years. So you have 890 minus 40, and that's 850. Now, how many Yovlos could have fit into that period of time from the moment that they entered into Eretz Yisrael until Churban Bayis Rishon? And the answer is 17 Yovlos, right? Because 50 years is a Yovel, you multiply that by 17 and you get 850. So if we know that the Churban Bayis Rishon was 850 years after the entry of Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. We know that that's 50. That's 50 times 17. That's 17 Yovel periods. Now, since the pasuk tells us that the Yovel was 14 years after the Churban of Yerushalayim, then we must assume that they didn't count Yovlos for those 14 years from the period of Knesset Eretz Yisrael, meaning they entered Yisrael at a certain time. They only started counting the minyan of Yovlos 14 years later. And therefore, you could be mashlim the Yovel only 14 years after the Churban. Now, why didn't they count the Yovel for those 14 years after entering into Eretz Yisrael? And the answer must be that those 14 years were dedicated to Kibush v'Chiluk, and during those 14 years before they actually settled the land, there was no possibility of counting Yovel. And that would therefore mean that the period of time in which, let's say, from entering into Eretz Yisrael until the end of Chiluk was 14 years. We know, and we've already proven, that it took 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So 7 minus 14, it means it took 7 years to divvy up the land of Eretz Yisrael. The Brisa says, how do we know that the old Moed was situated in Nov and Givon for 57 years? Minola, how do we know this? The Chsiv, regarding Eliyahu Kohen. Now Eliyahu Kohen, when he hears about the fact that the Aron Elokim, the Bris Elokim, was taken captive at the Melchama with Plishtim. So the Pasuk testifies in Shmuel Aleph Perek Dalid, Vayhibas Kiroas Aron Elokim, Vayipol Me'al Kisei Acharanis. A very tragic incident, and Eliyahu Kohen dies. Immediately after Eliyahu Kohen dies, Shiloh is destroyed. Hashem postponed the destruction of Shiloh until after the death of Eliyahu Kohen. V'tonik Shemes Eliyahu Kohen Chorva Shiloh Bo L'Nov. So immediately they established the old Moed in Nov. But then Kishemei Shmuel HaRamasi, when Shmuel HaNovi dies, Chorva Nov, Nov is destroyed at the hands of Shaul HaMelech. Again, Hashem postponed this event until after Shmuel would die. And that's the tragic episode in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof Beis, when Shaul sends his people, his battalions to kill out the Kohen Nov. So that's the Churban of Nov, which coincides with the death of Shmuel HaNovi. Then they established the old Moed in Givon. And the Pasuk says in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, with regard to Givon, that on the first year that David HaMelech became the Melech al Kol Yisrael, first he was 7 years the Melech on Yehuda, then he became the king over all of Israel. Vayhi b'yom sheves ha'orim b'kiryas ya'orim. In other words, the Aron Elokim that had originally been taken captive by the Plishtim now reaches Kiryas ya'orim after it was redeemed, 7 months after it was captured, at the time of Eli's death. Vayirbu yomim hayomim vayiyub esrim shana vayinahu kol beis Yisrael achri Hashem. So from the moment of the death of Eli and the Churban of Shiloh, when they came to Nov, and from that time the Aron reaches Kiryas Yarim until the beginning of Malchus David al Kol Yisrael was 20 years. That's clear in the Pasuk Vayu Esrim Shana. Now, what is this 20-year period? Hani Esrim Shana. Hani, what's it comprised? I'll break it down into its component parts. Eser Shonim Shemolach Shmuel Biatzmo. Okay, this is before Shaul was appointed king. So Shmuel is called the Shofet Shel Yisrael. He's the final leader, the final authority. The buck stops here. He's called a Melech, so to speak. He's the Shofet. And then even after Shaul HaMelech was appointed king, there was 1 year in which Shmuel and Shaul worked together in tandem until Shaul rebels, so to speak, against Shmuel at the time of Melchemes HaMolech, and from then there was a total split between Shmuel and Shaul. Shaul didn't see Shmuel at all after that. I mean, Shmuel didn't see Shaul after that. So that was that 1 year period. Then Shaul, Ushtayim Molech Shaul Levado, he's king for 2 years. So we're now up to 13 years. Ushtayim Shemol, yeah, fine. Usheva de David, that's in the city of Hebron on Shevet Yehuda. So we've got seven. So if we had seven plus two plus one plus 10, we have 20. So from the time that David starts being reigns as king over all Israel, that's when they bring the Aron to Ir David. And therefore the Aron was in Kiryas Yearim from the time of beginning of Malchus Shmuel. Again, when I say Malchus, I mean that in a figurative sense, he became a shofet, because the Aron Elokim doesn't reach Kiryas Yearim until after the death of Eli and the Churban of Shiloh. When they came to Nov, at that time the Aron reaches Kiryas Yearim, and that's going to be a period of time until the beginning of Malchus David HaKol Yisroel, which is made up of 10 years of Shmuel, another year of both Shmuel and Shaul, another 2 years of Shaul, the 7 years of David as Melech B'Chevron, and finally when David HaMelech brings the Aron to the year David, and he's Molech HaKol Yisroel, that's the end of this 20-year period in which the Aron is in Kiryas Yearim. And now we're turning to Daf Kuf Yud Tes Omid Aleph. And the Gemara now continues to try to calculate that 57-year period of Nov and Givon. So again, there were 20 years in which the Aron was in Kiryas Yearim until the beginning of the Malchus David al Kol Yisrael. Now we have to add the years from David HaMelech's appointment as king up until Shlomo HaMelech building the Bayis. Dichsiv, and the Pesukim Malachim Aleph says, Vayomim Asher Malach David al Yisrael Arboim Shana Bechevron. I'm sorry, Arboim Shana Bechevron Malach Sheva Shonim Vyushlaim Malach Shloshim Vishalosh Shonim. So the 40-year period of Malchus David is made up of two parts. There's 7 years over Melech, over Yehuda in Chevron. There are 33 years over Melech HaKol Yisrael in Ir David. So now we have to add to the 20 years the, right, because again, the 20-year period begins, shall I say, coincides with the Aron coming to Kiryas Yearim and the establishment of Nov. So from Nov until the Tchilas Malchus Beis David is 20 years. The Malchus Beis David is now going to last 33 years. So we got to add 20 to 33, and we end up with 57. Wait a minute, we still don't have 57, we have 53. Oh, I was just saying if you're awake. Ubishlomo HaMelech, with regard to Shlomo, it says, with regard to Binyan Beis HaMikdash and Divrei Yomim Beis Perek Gimel, it says, Vayochel Livnoso, when does he begin to build the Mikdash? Bachodesh HaSheni, Basheni Bishnas Arba Malchus. So it's the fourth year. So we have to add another 4 years. We had 53, now we had 4, we have 57. So from the time of Novin Givon until the Binyan Bais Rishon of Shlomo Melech is 57 years. And the Braisa concludes by saying that all these cheshbonos that teach us from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the end of the Old Moed period in Givon, we said was 111 years, and therefore if we want to calculate now how long Shiloh stood, we're going to take that 110 year period and we're going to subtract it from I'm sorry, did I say 110? I meant to say 111. So the Cheshbon from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the end of the Old Moed and Givon was 111 years. Now we're going to subtract 111 from 480 years, which is the period of time from Yetzias Mitzrayim until Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and we can figure out Nishtayru L'Shiloh, what's left for Shiloh is Shlosh Meos V'Shivim Chaser Achas, another 369 years. Okay, we're going to talk about
no v'giv on tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem. So let's just make a note of where we got to on Kuf Yud Tes, towards the very top of the page, and we're up to the two dots, that is, five lines down from the top.